Welcome to the Hard Water Fishing Show. Jeff and Jason talk tactics, gear, and ice fishing legends.
Welcome to the Hard Water Fishing Show, Season 4, Episode 12. We are alive, and it is the third week of February, 2021, Jeff.
And they're ice fishing in Texas.
Yes, they are. Oh, those poor people. Oh, my goodness.
Yes.
So, yes. I know some folks that went down to Texas, to South Padre, for the first time ever in their whole lives. They're retired folks. Yeah, so I don't know if they got in on the rescuing the sea turtle business down there. But so have you read it? Did you hear about this? We're going to diverge right away. So these
right away, just immediate right divergence. Out of the gate,
taking a left. So these poor sea turtles, right? They are, they're cold. They're cold. They're used to warm. And so they just like lock up. And so they took them. And they're stacking them inside like cars, and they're taking them to this arena to warm them up and keep them alive. Huh. So they're just like there's pictures of this where they're just stacking them like logs, all different sizes of sea turtles to keep them from dying. And while I think that's great, I just wonder, like, what if people weren't around? Would there just be no more sea turtles, or would there, you know, a couple of them would come out of it and continue on the sea turtle way or what? It's just really interesting. So,
all right, we're going to take a further left here before then we'll get to
you need to go right. Show, so then we'll end up back in the middle.
Okay. I'll go right. All right. So I was reading this thing recently about, winter kill, right? Like in Minnesota.
Oh, lakes, sure. Yeah.
And so they were talking about how, sometimes, because usually when a winter kill, lots of fish will die, right? Because there's not enough oxygen in the water, like on really cold years, or there's lots of snow on the ice, so you can't get through. But they said for some lakes, you know, because not every fish dies in the lake, right? Just a lot of them do, depending on how bad low it gets. But actually, it kind of rejuvenates the lake to a point sometimes, even for fish, right? So maybe a few years after that, it kind of comes back like better than it did before. So I don't know, maybe it's part of nature's way of rejuvenation, like after a fire.
I don't know. These people seem pretty intent on they needed to save the sea turtles, and they did.
Good for them.
But I don't think you could do that with fish. You'd have to like scoop them up and put them in your bathtub or something.
Put them in your pool.
I don't know, but you know, they put bubblers in lakes, right? To help with that. So.
Yeah, that's actually what this article was about, because they said you have to get a special permit in Minnesota to have a bubbler. And they said a lot of them are private. There's very few public bubblers.
Aerator. I bet it's called an aerator, not a bubbler.
bubbler,
aerator, all right. Whatever.
See, we're getting off. We're back straight again. We went left and right. We're down the middle.
So our topic tonight is a tracked contraption, homemade to get you out ice fishing at a low cost. We interviewed a fellow by the name of Ken Hirschman out of Wyoming, Utah, west of us, over towards the mountain area, across the Great Plains to the mountains. That's where Ken lives, way that direction. So we're interviewing him at the end of the show, towards the end of the show. So stick around for that. Guy's awesome. You'll like it.
He is. All right, Jay, we've talked a lot already, and just making it to
I can't hardly talk.
I know, you're so dry in parts. All right, so I got something new tonight. I have, from Left Hand Brewing Company, a Milk Stout Nitro, America's Stout. Super smooth with soft roastiness and mocha notes. So here we go.
What?
Did you hear that?
I did.
It was nitro. It had like a thing inside.
That opening was really good.
This is really good. Oh, but boy.
It, I don't know. Some of the stuff you drink is strange.
Did you hear that? It like...
I know, I'll give you that. It had a great opening. I don't know if you're drinking something from Starbucks there or beer. So
yeah, all right.
I took some inspiration tonight from David, our friend at Lake of the Ozarks. And he, I had reached out to him because, you know, they have a place down there, and to see how they were doing with the storm, because I knew it had, that Lake of the Ozarks had frozen over. And so I was seeing if he had actually been ice fishing, right? Because he had set the ice shack up on his dock, and he didn't have a chance to do that. So, but what he did suggest, he made a suggestion, he said he likes the Stella Artois. I can't pronounce it. Stella
Artois.
Artois. Is that how you pronounce it?
Yeah,
I'm Stella like, Artois. Artois.
That's the Iowan pronunciation.
Stella Artois is what I'm drinking tonight on a suggestion from David. So let me see if I got to hang on. I got to take the paper. I don't know why it has.
It looks like champagne.
It's kind of. I got to unwrap the paper here to get to the thing. There we go. It's imported. Hang on, I gotta use the other side of this. There we go. Something about 1366. This has been around a while. Not bad.
I've had a Stella. It's pretty
good. It's not bad. I will drink this very happily over whatever I drank the last time.
So it's a French beer, right?
Oh, I don't know. Is it? Is it? No, it says Belgium on it. Belgium.
Belgium. Oh.
I didn't know the French were into beer. I thought it was more the German, Belgium people.
Yeah. I'm guessing, this is just my guess, not a lot of Stella Artois get drank on the ice. But today we're trying it.
I'm telling you, I needed something palatable. And this...
That's good stuff.
It is. It's very good. Yeah. I'll drink it. I wouldn't say it's top 10.
I'm just glad that you've learned after drinking IPAs for the past two seasons.
It has been a slog.
These are terrible. That finally you got, well, maybe IPAs aren't for me.
Maybe it's not my jam, IPAs. So there we go. Moving on.
Show business, Jason. Patron, not Patron. We really enjoy our patrons, so thank you to everybody who gives to the show. If you want to support the show and join our patrons, then you can click on the link. It's hardwatershow.com patron, or the link is on top of our website there. So if you would like a t-shirt, a sweatshirt, something that says Hardwater Show on it, you can get that on our merch site, and you can click on the link on our website to get there. And... you can also find us on social media, on Instagram and Facebook. You can't really find us on TikTok yet, because even though we have an account, we haven't done anything with it. So that our media relations expert is going to have to get to that.
Yeah, more to come on that, maybe. We'll have to figure that out. I don't know much about it yet, but I think it's like 1 minute increments, isn't it, TikTok? So that might fit my attention span a lot better.
Yeah. Yeah. One more thing I forgot to mention about patrons. We do have a new employee at the Hardwater Fishing Show, Jason.
I thought it was an independent contractor.
Oh, yeah, maybe. I don't know.
Employee would indicate some sort of compensation package or workman's comp situation or unemployment if we have to let him go.
So my wife has taken over the relations to external clients and patrons. So she is sending out stickers, so we make sure we get those out on time and making sure we get our all of our patrons' customer service stuff done. So that'll be nice to have somebody, so you don't get your stickers a month after you send me your patron.
Perfect.
So
I like it.
Exactly. I know. I do too, because it helps me. You can find all of our episodes on hardwatershow.com. We have a YouTube channel. Jason, have you been there yet?
Just that time you put a link that made me go there by accident.
Well, there are 100 other people that are subscribed to our channel now.
Okay.
I got an email from YouTube that said we have reached 100 subscribers.
I don't suppose we can monetize that yet.
I think you have to get like 1,000 or something.
I bet
like,
it's more than that.
Yeah. But hey, like we're on our
way. We're on our way. You got to start somewhere.
You do. You can email us, hardwatershow@gmail.com. That's a great way to get in contact with us, and that is on our website too, if you can't remember it. And just remember, we do read everything, even if we don't talk about it. So that is show notes, show business.
Wonderful.
Jazz hands.
All right. So we've got some news up here, right? They're talking about some lower limits in Minnesota for walleye.
You know, one of my favorite things to read is on Fridays, I get my outdoor news. And, you know, it has a lot of good information in it for, it's not just fishing, it's hunting, but there's always a good portion of ice fishing and fishing in there. There was a proposal for Minnesota, anyways, to lower the limit to 4 walleyes versus 6. And, you know, I guess this comes up from time to time, but the way they talked about it was, you know, anglers will really support kind of keeping a healthy fish habitat, and that's kind of good. In this case, they were saying there wasn't really a lot of science or reasoning behind it. It was just seemed like a good idea.
Oh, okay.
Is what the article. So they said, you know, I think the real point of it was they, and this was written by Ron Shera, who's a like locally famous person, I would say. He's pretty well known up here. He has a TV show and for many years. But he started talking about this in similar fashion to anglers, you know, needing to be more active for changes that they want to, you know, the rules and laws that anglers have to run by. And one of the examples was he gave, he's been doing this a long time. So he said March 23rd of 1979, which was a few years ago, there was a proposal that they were going to ban the use of electronics for fishing.
Wow.
So this must have been right when, like, electronics were just starting to come into. Yeah,
the old green box and stuff, maybe.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So there was, it was just an example of, you know, I mean, we love fishing, obviously, and just kind of, it is important to be active and make sure that, you know, your views are heard. Otherwise, you know, in 1979, we might have never got electronics.
Well, that would have saved us a lot of money.
It really would have, but a lot less fish would have been caught too. So
yeah,
so
but then there would have been more fish, so it would have been easier to catch.
Well, I don't know.
So is it like a self-defeating prophecy kind of deal?
Maybe.
I don't know.
But the point was, you know, we usually stay out of politics here pretty good. But the point is, you know, as anglers, we need to make sure we're advocating for what we want. Otherwise, other people will advocate for what they want. So
yeah, regardless of what side of the spectrum you're on, you should get involved in stuff that's mm-hmm. important to you, because otherwise, honestly, you don't have a right to complain about it.
That's exactly. How I look another at example. It. Yep. And another example they gave is, I guess in the early 80s, there was a lot of pushback to putting in public ramps in some
sure.
lakes, and you know, I mean, that's another example of.
And there still is.
Yep. So.
Yeah.
So get involved, and, you know, I mean, if you think it's a great idea to have 4 walleyes, that's great. If you don't, make sure your voice is heard. So
of course, you could always just take 4 walleyes home and not 6.
Yes, you could always do that, too. That's absolutely right. So, all right. I usually take 1 or something, right? 0.
Yeah. Yep. I'm like, well, maybe not today. Maybe the next
maybe time. Not today. Yeah. Maybe next time. Yeah, so I think that's really all I had for kind of listen. Well, we actually have, that's kind of the news part, but we have some listener questions.
Yeah, we did. Jay. We've got some great listener questions. So let me flip over to the listener questions here on the Facebook. All right, so I posted here a little while ago about we're recording tonight, and we got 17 comments here on our listener questions, which is great. Let's see. First one I think we can take from Jordan. When fishing on Mille Lacs, do you stay in your hard-sided shack or do some running and gunning? We rent a place every year, and it's good for rattle reels, but daytime, do better not sitting still. I would say we've done both. Jeff, you're in there most on the hard-side shack, but you're wearing Crocs most of the time, so I don't reckon you're doing a whole lot of running and gunning, are you?
I mean, I will do some. Honestly, here's how I think about it is early ice, right? So my wheelhouse is at the Red Door, right? And so early ice, when before you can get wheelers, you're walking out, it's a great place because there's great fishing within walking distance from shore, right? So early season, as soon as you can get out there, I'll bring my portable and fish out there outside, right? Until as long as I can, until you can get your wheelhouse out. Mm-hmm. Typically, I find once you get your wheelhouse out, you're kind of not in that early season. You're kind of in the mid season, right? And not that running and gunning doesn't work, but I find that when you get to that time of the season, kind of sitting is kind of usually what I do. So I'll move my shack, you know, but it's kind of how, you know, I'll sit in a spot. If that doesn't work, I'll move my shack to another spot. But I don't do a ton of running and gunning once my wheelhouse is out. Now, sure. That might not be the right thing, but I find that time of year, the fish aren't super active and you can chase them or you can wait for them to come to you. And typically that later season, I would just wait for them to come to you. However, last time you were up, Jay, you had a different experience, right? I mean, I was out in my hard-sided shack and you did much better than I.
Yeah, I have a really hard time sitting still when the fish aren't biting. So if I have the ability to be mobile, I will. So I guess that's the best advice I have. That I think it kind of just depends. But you know, if they're not biting where you're at, it certainly doesn't hurt to move a bit. I know we've done rentals years ago. If you're sitting in a rental and you're not getting fish for 8 hours straight, 10 hours straight, you get cranky. So I think making sure that especially if you've got the gear sitting at home to be mobile and yes, you didn't bring true. It. Because you're like, well, we're right. going to a shack. Why would I bring all this stuff? Mm-hmm. Well, I think, you know, you still would be well served to at least bring an auger in a bucket, you know, and some warm clothes so that you've got something to sit on. And if you want to go on a lark and try some different spots, you can do that. I mean, with the road system, you can take your car and just hop out of the car, drill a couple holes, put up some tip-ups, and sit in the car, warm car, and watch flags. So, you know, I think
just don't drill the holes close to the road.
Well, they make those nice, they plow those nice flat roads. It's perfect. You can see the tip up. You could put tip ups out both ways. No, don't do that. Yeah. Don't do that. I'm kidding.
No.
You could do that once.
Yes.
Once.
Yeah. So that'd be the end of it. I think it depends. It depends on you and what you want to do. I actually oftentimes, it's my escape too, right? Like that's what I do when I had a hard week at work or when, you know, I need to get away. And sometimes I feel like I want to work and fish hard. And sometimes I'm happy sitting in my warm ice shack watching some sports and letting the red wheels do their thing. So it really is a mood. You got to wait for the weather. If it's 30 below, I'm going to sit in my shack because it's a lot warmer in there, right? So,
what's the latest in the season you've ever ice fished?
I have a little story for this. I may have told this one before, Jay. We were up with my brother-in-law, Brian, up at his place. It was late, like March. I don't know. We were up there for the weekend fishing. And there was lots of ice. I'm telling you, there was a foot of ice. But it was like, you know, the quality of the ice might have been a little lower, right? So we were fishing that weekend. And then, so we went home on Sunday, and on Tuesday it was ice out.
Nice.
I mean, I couldn't believe it because of the thickness that the ice was there, but it was ice out there. So that's 2 days before ice out. That's as close as I've ever been to late season. I don't know what the date was. It was certainly late March, but I don't know what the date was.
Very cool. I guess I don't know. I don't have a date, so I won't answer that one. I don't really know.
I also remember you and I fishing up at your place out of a boat like the first week of April one
we
year.
We did.
Because it was so warm.
Yeah.
So
Chris Myers asked a question about barotrauma. I think I'm pronouncing that right. And we've talked about this on the show before. I will dig back up the article and post that in a reply to Chris's question that talks about, it was a study by, wasn't the University of Minnesota, Jeff, we talked about, and you can build a device really simply. Basically, it's a weight and a line. And the short story is what you do is, and you can use your Vexlar or your flasher to do this. you can take and clip a weight and a line to that fish, and you send them down, and when they get to where you basically caught them, you give the line a jerk, and you release the fish back at the depth you caught them. And studies show that if you do that, there's a really high level of survival rate with respect to mortality on some studies they did. Now, the study doesn't talk about walleye and crappie and perch and these other things, but I think it's a better solution than fizzing a fish where they put a needle and you evacuate the air out of the swim bladder.
I think they recommended not to do that
specifically in that article. So I'll dig that article up out of the archives somewhere. I know it's actually on our page somewhere. I think I linked it once, but I'll do it again because I think we don't talk about it enough. Everybody talks about going deep in the late winter, and then you get a lot of fish that end up kind of getting shoved under the ice because you can't keep them maybe in a slot limit lake, and they just get recycled back into nature, but it'd be better to keep them swimming too.
You know, these are people that really did a study and know what they're talking
about. They're like scientists.
Exactly.
But it kind of makes sense too, you know.
Yep.
And actually, you know, you could do your own if you tried that, and I haven't really, I guess I haven't had occasion to try it. You know, you would know yourself if you did that a half a dozen times and the fish swam away versus it just floated back up to your hole.
Right.
I mean, you'd start learning. So let us know. Report back. Let's see.
Jason, I think we have to answer this one from Max from Hardwater Freaks.
Okay, yep, where?
He said, are muskies good to eat?
Absolutely.
So I always keep all of them, especially the ones over 60 inches.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I mean, I just throw them in the frying pan. I mean, there's so much meat there. Well, that's what you're going to
do,
right?
So what you do is you flay them out. And you know how you can get the bones out of a northern. Well, same thing with a muskie, right? And then, especially being at Lent, you know, you're looking for a big fish sandwich. And so you go to the store and you get yourself a huge loaf of French bread, right? And you cut that sucker and you toast it both sides and you put some lettuce on there and you about one bottle of tartar sauce. You fry that thing up and you slap it on the French bread. And you just cut it up and invite all your friends, hand it to them.
Only if it's bigger than 60 inches.
Hand it through the window so we don't get COVID, and off to the races you go.
Okay.
And Max, I do want to thank you for your musky recipe. That was actually really good. So thanks.
But seriously, no, I don't keep or eat muskies.
I think it would depend, right? If I'm needing a fish meal. No, I don't know that I would. I probably wouldn't.
No, and there's lots of rules about muskies. I actually am not a big muskie fisherman.
I've not fished for them specifically.
If you pin me down, I don't know if I've ever caught one. I mean, I don't think I have.
I think you'd remember.
I think I would, and I don't think I do.
I've caught a small, like a baby one once, you know, like 16 inches. Yeah. Any tips for fishing for cusk? I don't know what cusk is. What's cusk?
I have the same problem.
Google that up.
I know we've talked about this before, We've talked about cusk.
I think we have. What is... I'm scared to put this in my search engine. What is cusk? What is cusk? It looks like that's a burbot or a eel pout.
Oh.
It's an eel pout. Okay. We had another question on that this time, like what tactics for fishing for burbot. Most of the times when we catch them, it's on walleye tackle. When I make the guys stay out later than they want to stay out. We also did an episode on that, and I linked that in the comments too. Season 2, we did that. And so I linked that episode, so feel free to take a listen. And that might help you out there.
The short answer was big lure with lots of meat on the bottom banging really loud. Like, that's what I remember. They're very aggressive when you want lots of noisy stuff.
Yeah, they're an aggressive fish in the evening when they feed, definitely. When you go fishing on a new lake, what do you look for? Do we want to take that one?
I basically look for breaks. I look for structure. I look for pinch points where I think fish might be funneled through. You know, saddles, those kinds of things.
I'm an inside corner guy.
Yeah.
I like those inside corners. And then depending on if it's a kind of a popular lake, I kind of look for where all the holes are. And if that matches up what I'm seeing on my lake map, you know, they're kind of yar. So yep. you're looking for the weed lines that intersect with the holes that the 35 other guys that were there before you drilled, and yep. Looking for some structure. So that I think that's kind of where I'm at.
Social media can't hurt you there. Google it. You know, I go to Mille Lacs a fair amount, but I still ask when I go up there, where are they catching them? Because just because I caught them in one spot last week doesn't mean they're fish catching them next week. So
I always look for the old guy fishing by himself. Oh, yeah. Like when I'm looking for, when I'm trying, so this, I don't know if this is good or bad, but it's what I do. So if I'm kind of scouting a lake and I'm looking at various outfits and people and situations and I'm comparing that to my lake map, I'm looking for that one guy who is not necessarily running all the new fancy stuff, but the guy that's well outfitted in a very practical way and fishing by himself.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause that guy's not out there for, I would say it's not that he's not out there for the fun of it. 'Cause he is, he clearly enjoys doing it, but, he's business and he knows what he's looking for most of the time. You know, that's how I do it. And the nice thing about those guys, they'll get annoyed if you go fish by them and they leave.
But it's not too close. Don't be rude.
I'm not. I'm kidding. I would never.
But an old guy like that, a half a mile away, might be too close.
Yeah, you're giving me pressure.
All right. So, Jay, we're moving on to the fishing report.
I think so.
Were you out fishing last weekend?
I do. No. It was cold. It was 15 below, and I'm working on a basement remodeling project that I've got some deadlines on. So I didn't do it. I'm sorry.
It was really cold. I was out. Really cold. I didn't catch any fish, but when it's that cold, fishing isn't good. But you go when you have the time, right?
Yep.
And so I had a free 2 days, so Saturday and Sunday, so I went up. And, you know, during the day, you know, you can deal with minus 15, right? Minus 15 is tolerable. Minus 25 or minus 30 is pretty rough. Now, I'm in my wheelhouse, but I put, my quote was cold and unprepared. So it was really cold and I didn't catch any fish. But part of that is we didn't stay for real long because, you know, during the day we did okay and it was warm enough. Overnight, which happens sometimes. It's never happened to me, but it happened this time. Propane at some point doesn't like to flow when it gets so cold. It
gets too cold, and then it's sad.
So it was pretty cold in the shack overnight. And I typically have backups for my backups, but my backups for my backups still weren't cutting it, right? I mean, everything just was unhappy with life. My generator wasn't happy with life. It was just cold. So, you know, I mean, we did fine, but... if I was going to do that trip over again, I probably would have just stayed home. It was pretty cold. We didn't catch any fish, and we had a lot of equipment malfunctions. Luckily, and I've talked about this before, when you have a wheelhouse and you're at a resort, they're there to help you. So I had to phone a friend and have them come jump my car, and then it started, and then we went home. So that's how my fishing trip went. But you know, the thing that I would say is, even though we didn't catch any fish, you know, the wheelhouse, which some people are like, oh, it's not kind of camping, fishing, whatever. I still enjoy it. And I also was able to bring my son with me, who probably would have never lasted in 30 below in a portable. We watched some movies and we hung out and we had fun. And so even though we didn't catch fish, I still had a good time. And I can tell you 10 years from now, we'll remember the time we went out and it was 30 below and everything went wrong and we still had a good time.
Yeah. So. And that's what it's all about. Spending time.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
That's awesome.
Totally.
Good story.
So that's what
happened. Even if you were totally unprepared and, you know,
yeah,
had kind of a disaster because of your lack of planning.
Yeah, it was a little bit. I don't know if I even say lack of planning. So like I even, you know, you think about these things when you're, you know, I have a jump box for my car. Right when your car doesn't start, yeah. Just for preparation. It was so cold, even the jump box wouldn't kick over the car, and it just
I ended up putting a new battery in my Suburban the same weekend. And I had a jump pack too that I've used a number of times, and it wouldn't even it'd go Mm-hmm. That was the end of that, because that oil is just is like molasses. Oh. So, you know, I had to put oil in cars when it's that cold, and you just have to squeeze the bottle out. It's like it's like syrup, and so your car is trying to turn over in that glop, and it just takes so much power.
We did fine. We had enough equipment and preparation to make it through minus 30, but it was not a fun night, but a memory anyways.
That's awesome.
So from a gear perspective, my next gear thing is a propane heater. They sell tank heaters for propane tanks. Yep. So I need to get one of those to up my game for probably anything more than minus 10 or 15.
Well, it's pretty cheap insurance against being miserable.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. So,
well, Jeff, are we ready to go to our topic?
Absolutely. I am excited about track machines.
Moving on to our topic, track machines, we have an interview with Ken Hirschman. Take a listen.
Today on the Hardwater Fishing Show, we have Ken Hirschman from Sheridan, Wyoming, and he is a builder of a track sled, which is kind of like a snowmobile, but much lighter weight that you use for ice fishing. So he sent me a picture of his track sled, and it looked really cool. So we wanted to get him on the show and talk about it. So welcome, Ken.
Hey, great to be here, guys.
Awesome. Yeah, I mean, I know we started out, I'm like, well, I was a little skeptical. I'm like, what? Why wouldn't I just get a cheap old snowmobile or something? And then, you know, you came up with some really good reasons why this is a way better solution. So why don't you tell us a little bit about what a track sled is and, you know, what they're good for?
Well, a track sled is basically a snow machine that has been completely disassembled except for the tunnel and the track. I watch in the summertime, I watch a lot of YouTube videos on ice fishing, cause I love to ice fish.
Sure.
I've known about there's a manufacturer, a Snow Dog. I
don't know. Yep.
A lot of people have heard of those, and, you know, I've always thought they were pretty cool. But I was messing around on YouTube, and I had seen a clip where a guy had said, you know, build your own. And so I clicked on it and watched it. And I'm like, well, I'm kind of a gearhead. So I build motorcycles and I've got four wheelers and snow machines. And that's like, I have got to, I got to build one of these.
Very cool.
Yeah. Right. It's very cool. So, I went on kind of the local market thing here in town and found somebody that had an old snow machine out back for free. And so I went to his place and looked at it and I drug it out of the, I had to use my pickup to drag it out, and I got it. I mean, it was bad. It was really rough. This thing was just terrible. And I got it home and the tunnel was fairly straight and the track was really, really long. I didn't know what to do. So I just got the grinder out and I just started, there's really not a lot of methodology to it other than cutting every single thing off of the tunnel that you can, including all the motor mounts and everything. And once I got that done, I was really amazed at how light this thing is. I mean, it is just crazy light. I'm like most ice fishermen, I think probably all ice fishermen, you know, when that ice gets to be around 4 inches, you know, it's safe, but you always feel a little nervous, right?
Yeah.
Nope.
Yep. Yep.
Oh yeah.
So, been there. Yeah. So every year I hand drag my sled out, you know, and I hate it. I just hate doing that. You know, it just sucks. And I don't want to take my four wheeler out, cause that makes me too nervous. Well, this is just such a great option because it's just so light. I can just, you know, I can just tractor it right out there. The thing only weighs about, I mean, it's, you know, 220, 230 wow. pounds with all my stuff on it. So, wow. I'm feeling really safe. I stand in a little sled behind it, and then I pull my ice house behind that. And so the weight is really, really spread out. I feel super safe. To make a short story long, I stumbled across a great Facebook page. It's called Track Sleds of the North.
I might be a member now, just so you know.
Yeah. And man, you know, it's just such a great group of guys. There's a couple thousand members and growing. There's just so much information and everybody's doing different things. There's no real right way or wrong way. It's just whatever you really want to do. And you know, and it's super fun. It's just a, such a super fun project to do. And it's actually fairly easy and it's fairly inexpensive. I mean, you could take it to the moon if you wanted, but, you know, you can go and maybe find an old motor, an old pump motor. You can buy a new motor, you know, a cheap motor, a Honda motor. You can do all kinds of things and, you know, rig it all up.
So what, tell me what size motor you got on yours.
Well, right now I just got the kind of the Harbor Freight, cheap, 6.5 horsepower. Cause, you know, they're real cheap. They're only like $100.
Yeah.
And I, you know, I didn't know what I was doing. So it wasn't, I didn't even know if the thing would be worth it, you know? So I just went the cheap route and now that I'm hooked and I'm convinced this thing is such a blast, I'm probably going to be investing. I actually, my father-in-law has an old Wisconsin pump motor, out on his ranch, and I'm going to try to pick that thing up. I think it's a 10 or 11 horse motor. Okay. And I'm going to put that on it. Yeah. So
it's a horizontal shaft motor.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And most of them are, you know, they're all kind of have a 3/4 or 1 inch shaft on them. And, you know, if you go to your local, you know, farm implement store or look online, you can find a sprocket or, you know, a hub or something that'll fit it, you know, even, you know, if you kind of got to manufacture one, you know, one of the biggest things that helps people, I think, when they're making these is if you have kind of a little shop welder, that's really, you know, the two tools I think that are the most important in building a track sled is an angle grinder with a cutting Check. Wheel. Yeah.
Got one of those.
Yeah. And if you kind of got a small, you know, shop welder, I mean, you can pretty much do about anything.
Got one of those.
So Jason, yeah. I'll be visiting with my sled that doesn't work.
The wheels are turning in my head, Ken, because
yeah.
I had looked at the snow dogs, but they're just, they're priced out of what the Minister of Finance and War would allocate for such a purchase.
Yeah, I agree with my four wheeler and motorcycles and dirt bikes and boat. And, yeah, it's way out there. Way out there.
Well, and I think where you hooked me was when you said, because I'm like, well, you know, that's kind of interesting. But when you're like, well, it takes up a lot less space. So from what I'm thinking is I was looking at a snowmobile, but yeah, I get a trailer and then I have to have space to store it and that kind of stuff. And this is small, compact, and fits in like an SUV even probably, right?
Yeah.
What I was wondering, Ken, is so one thing I run into a lot in Iowa is not this year. We have like feet of snow. But in a lot of years, we have so limited snow that where you park to go fishing, you're in a parking lot and it's dry, right? So if you're trying to run a sled, you're running it over rocks and whatever, and they get cranky. So does this do okay on that kind of surface? Have you tried it out?
Yep. This thing goes over anything. I've pulled it up onto the beach of the lake, pulled it over rocks. I just went down to Boisen Reservoir. I got back last night and, I ran that thing all over the place and, it was great.
Would this thing drag a deer out of the woods? I'm thinking now.
Oh yeah. Well, hey, I'm right there with you. I do a lot of elk hunting and I'm going to be using it to probably haul my elk out.
Nice.
Yeah, it'll easily pull a deer. Absolutely. Yeah. So on my, you know, I got a big Toyota Tundra pickup, I got a trailer, I got all that stuff. And so when I just, when I went to Boyson Reservoir walleye fishing this weekend, or this weekend here, I just put the, I put the track sled in the back of the pickup, and then I put my ice house on the hitch carrier, and I just took off. I didn't have to pull a trailer or nothing. I could probably put them both in the back of my pickup, but since I was kind of by myself, I just wanted to, you know, be able to unload my sled and all that stuff really easy. So I didn't take a trailer or nothing. I just loaded it all up in there and took off. Now, the cool thing about my track sled, the one I built, is it has a reverse on it. And I didn't know that when I got it. I didn't really know a whole lot about any of this stuff, but it had a high-low transmission with reverse, and so I'm able to just pull it or just drive it in the back of my pickup, put it in reverse, and then back it right out.
Holy cow. So yeah. That's slick.
Yeah, it's really cool.
So if a guy's looking for a donor sled, you want one with reverse?
Well, the reverse is very, very handy. However, I find that the high and low transmission is far superior than the reverse because then you could do your gearing between your motor and your jack shaft, or the shaft that runs the drive on the snow machine. You can do that kind of a middle of the road, 9-to-1 or 8-to-1, 7-to-1. But if you got a high low transmission, you know, then you can just put it in low gear. You got a lot more pulling power, or put it in high gear, and you got a lot more speed. If you can find an old machine about a 1990s, maybe late 80s, those really work the best because they have the bogey wheels under them.
Okay.
So that helps when you're on dry ground and, or when you don't have a lot of snow, you know, it helps the track roll a lot easier.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And the same thing, like if you're looking for a donor sled, a shorter track sled really is the key. Unfortunately, mine was a long track. And so I ended up having to, you know, actually take the track apart. I cut down the machine. I cut the track down, you know, bolted it back together. You know, it worked just fine because you're not spinning at a high RPM. So it really doesn't matter how you get the track back together, as long as it's bolted together decent.
Yeah, the one I saw one where somebody cut it down, because that must be pretty common, and they just use their angle grinder to cut it down and then kind of put it back together. And then they use like washers and bolts just to like cut the track down and kind of bolt the track together.
That's exactly correct. Exactly correct. And, you know, and these things aren't super fast, you know, but it beats hand pulling.
Yeah. Is it faster than a old guy walking across the lake, right?
It's gotta be faster 100. Than me dragging a sled.
Yeah.
And a lot easier too. A lot easier. Yeah. So, I mean, as far as a donor sled, you know, that's really, I think those are good things to look for is, you know, something that's got a roller track on it, or it's got rollers, and something that's a shorter track. The lugs on the track do not need to be very deep because you're not, you know, typically you're not going through a ton of deep snow, you know, so like a 1 inch or less. I think my old sled's got like a 1/2 inch old track on it and it's all cracked, but man, the thing works just flawlessly.
So like I said, my wheels are turning, Kenny. You said you did most of your cutting with an angle grinder, but I do have a cutting torch I really like to employ. Could a guy use that?
most of the things on a snow machine are aluminum or cast aluminum.
Okay.
So you know, you can use a plasma cutter. They work pretty good, but you just, you know, and there's no pretty way to do it. Safety gear on, earmuffs, eyeglasses, gloves, and just go after it. Just start cutting everything you can off of it.
Okay.
And then, that's kind of the deal with the donor sled.
Well, awesome. So, so what is like one of the biggest things you've pulled with it? Like, because I know some people like, is it like a couple hundred pounds or like, you know, you said you could hold an elk, but
You know, I hauled here about 3 weeks ago. I hauled, there were three guys and two full ice houses, and there were big ice houses. Like my otter, I've got a, you know, I did the trick your trap, you know, I got the whole, you know, it's all finished on the inside with beer holders and cubby holes and a 5 gallon bucket, all carpeted and nice boat seats. And that thing, that otter weighs a lot. It's super heavy. And, yeah, I pulled, it was three of us, you know, we had augers, we had all our gear, everything.
Wow.
And that track sled of mine pulled us. I mean, it was probably 2 miles out there, 2 miles back. So yeah, it's got a lot of power.
Wow. It's crazy. It's 6 horsepower. That's a lot of stuff you can pull. That's awesome.
Yeah. And what people, you know, here's the thing, right? You know, I mean, horsepower is great. But if the gearing is not correct, then it all kind of goes out the window. So really the gearing is the most important thing that you can do, is, you know, to have the gearing. And when you build one, you know, you want to keep all of the weight kind of low. It doesn't really do a lot of good to put a bunch of iron or fittings or platforms on the tunnel to get them, you know, you want that motor to sit as close to that tunnel as you can, keep that weight down. And, that really helps, but they are still a little bit tippy. And, you know, the thing about when you're driving one, when you're on the lake, you know, you got miles to turn around. So you don't really think about turning much. You just kind of go where you want to go. But if you get into an area where you really want to turn it tight, it's difficult because the things are so long. You know, so, and if you got snow, you know, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 inches of snow, we just got a foot of snow here last week. And man, when you kind of get good at driving one of these things, you learn how to kind of tip it on its side and carve it.
Cool.
Wow. And I'll tell you what, once you start to learn how to carve your machine, it just turns into a ball. I mean, I couldn't get my boys off this thing the other day. I mean, and all the neighbors around me, you know, I live in a, you know, live in town here, and, you know, they're all coming outside like, what is that? That's so cool, you know? But once you learn how to carve that thing and tip it on its side and push down on the handle, you can just rip it and turn real sharp. That's what's really fun.
Wow. I can already see like motocross style races with your track sled, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, if you can build it, they can race it.
Yeah.
So you've given us a lot of tips, Ken, about what to do. What are like a couple things maybe like don't do this? I know you mentioned like don't build a bunch of stuff on top, but there are the other things that you kind of said, oh, I wouldn't do this again, or this isn't a good idea when you're building a track sled.
You know, the things, something that's really, really, really important is, your motor position. And there's a lot of guys that do it different ways. And again, I don't think there's a right way and a wrong way. I wouldn't, you know, when I was kind of first messing around, I was trying to get my motor more in the middle of the machine. I didn't like it. You know, I didn't like it. I like the motor towards the front of the machine, right? Like where the track meets the ground, right over that point, because when you have the handle, you know, sticking, you know, 2 foot out the back of the machine, you can actually push down the handle and gain more traction with the back of a sled. And a snow machine is built that way. You know, all the weight on a snow machine is up front. And so doing the track sled, I think, you know, I moved the motor up front more. I liked it a little bit better. And it also made the chain a lot shorter. Chain. Yeah, short chain to the jack shaft, I think, is really important because you don't get a lot of chain slap. Mm-hmm. I didn't have to use a roller to kind of take that slap out of it. And you know, I like the shorter chain because it just, you know, it's less failure. Sure. You know, I've seen, I've seen, you know, I got a buddy of mine that has one too, and he had to use a, he used a half link on his chain to make it, he had to get his chain a little bit longer, and we took it out and the half link broke. So I definitely try not to use half links on your chain. Make sure it's solid and make sure that chain is straight, regardless of how it looks. You know, put a, I use a Motion Pro, it's called a Motion Pro chain alignment tool. You can really just use any straight rod, put it across the top of the chain, look to make sure that chain is traveling exactly straight. That is really, really important. Oh yeah. Don't use a motorcycle throttle. It sucks on your wrist. Right. So get a thumb throttle, use a thumb throttle, like off of an old four wheeler. You know, I went on, you know, eBay and found an old thumb throttle off of a, you know, an old three wheeler. And I just put that on there and boy, that's 100 times better. So yeah, you know, I think that's really important.
So you mentioned that just made me think of something, a mistake I would have made. I probably just would have done a slide throttle, like on a snow thrower. And then if I fell off, the thing just would have been traveling.
Bye-bye.
Yeah.
Been running after it. That would have been great.
So the handlebars actually look kind of complex. How did you fabricate those? Were they just from nothing, or did you have like some kind of donor parts for those?
Yeah, the handlebars I made, I used the first set I made, I used 1-inch square tube, and it was just too big. It was too big. Plus I really didn't like the look of it anyway. Mm-hmm. So I used a 3/4-inch square tubing, and I got kind of a little, you know, it's a little thicker. I just laid it out. So that I could fold the handle forward when I wasn't using the machine, or when I want to haul it to make it more compact. You know, I just laid it out. I just had to practice with it till I got the right length to it. And once I got the right length to it, I just kind of laid it out on the floor and then welded it together and reinforced it a little bit. And then I used motorcycle handlebars. And then I used some old handlebar holders off of an old motorcycle I had. That's what I did. I mean, there's a number of different ways you could probably do that, but just used the, you know, the top part of a triple tree and put it together. And that was it, man. I mean, it was pretty basic. Like cool. I said, then I did I did make my own cable. A lot of people have problems with finding a cable, that works between a thumb throttle or the wrist throttle down to the carburetor. But I got a bunch of that stuff cause I work on a lot of motorcycles. So,
gotcha.
But you can go online and there's a lot of places that carry long cables. I know Amazon does. I've seen them on Amazon where you can just order a long cable. You can even get custom ends that you can do yourself. Or if you're not afraid to solder a little bit with a soldering iron, you can really make some nice cables. So the handlebars are pretty cool. And like I said, the whole thing is so long, you know, you want those handlebars, you want the handlebars to fold forward. So when the machine is in storage or when I'm hauling it, I just unpin the handlebar and I just fold them forward and put a bungee on it. And then the whole thing is super compact.
Wow. Very cool.
Yeah. You guys got to build one.
We do.
I've been saying I'm going to build a Smitty sled for 4 years and haven't done it.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
this is way cooler than a Smitty sled, don't you?
Well, I wouldn't need a Smitty sled if I built this. So,
no. Right.
And I like, you know, you can probably, I see sleds all the time that have bad engines and they're just not worth anything, you know, especially older ones. So you could about go shopping in people's backyards for a free sled, I'm pretty sure. My kids always enjoy that too. If you just stop, hey, I'm gonna go talk to this guy about this thing in his backyard. They're like, "What are you, Dad? No."
So here's where like one of the really cool things about having one, right? So a buddy of mine, we went up to Devil's Lake, North Dakota here. Was it end of December? And I saw like three of them up there. And I mean, I'm just, you know, mine wasn't done yet. And I'm just freaking out, you know, like, oh my God, you know, and so now that mine's finished and I've been out using it quite a bit, I'm that guy. And that's so cool. That's the cool thing. That's one of the really cool things about it is you could be that guy. I went and fished the last couple of days down at Boyson Reservoir and the ice was 20 inches thick down there. And I could, you know, I mean, I drove my pickup out there.
Right.
But I still want to be that guy with that track sled. So I'm riding my track sled and driving that thing all over the reservoir.
Well, we've been out to Devils before and, you know, even when the ice is thick, if there's too much snow or there's too much snow in the water and it's super heavy, you know, you can't get a truck out there anyway. It's just because of the conditions. So, you know, the track sled, you can go anywhere you want to go on the lake, right?
Yep. Yep. And the cool thing is you have more access with the track sled. In Devil's Lake, you can pull alongside the road and a lot of those places, where the road goes by the lake and you could just get right on instead of having to, you know, trying to jockey a four-wheeler or a snow machine over somewhere you're not really supposed to be, but the track sled it'll just pile right on. And, you're absolutely correct. You know, cause I want to try to get back up to Devils, you know, this here next month. And I really don't want to pull a trailer for 10 hours with four-wheelers and snow machines. I'd rather just put this thing in the back of my truck with the sled and go.
Yeah, and we even run into problems too if you get, you know, four guys and four shacks and four snowmobiles. Oh. I mean, you know, their snowmobile trailers are only so big. You know, yeah. Like you run out of space.
Yeah, sure. My favorite place to fish ever, you know. I just love to fish up at Devil's Lake. It's just so fun.
Cool. No, we like it too. We've been there once, so
it's about 10 hours from me. So, but
yeah, it's like
about 8.5-9 for me. Jeff, you're closer.
Yeah, it's like 5, I think. It actually is a really easy drive. I remember super when we easy. Drove out there, freeway driving versus like when you go to Lake of the Woods, it's all 2-lane and that kind of stuff. So
yeah, you can make time, and if you're not pulling a big trailer, you can really make some time.
Yeah,
cool. So exactly. So this was super awesome. I'm glad we could talk about track sleds, but we do want to talk just a little bit about ice fishing because
you
fish in Wyoming where we don't fish. I mean, you fish in Devil's Lake where we fished, but so what is your favorite species to target? And, you know, kind of what are some tactics you use to do that? And, you know, maybe it'd be interesting to hear about Wyoming versus Minnesota or Iowa. So,
well, the here's the thing about Wyoming, right? We don't really have a lot of lakes.
Gotcha.
I know the feeling.
What we do have is we have reservoirs, and a reservoir is not a lake. Mm. Reservoir is man-made. And so you do have to fish it a little bit different. You know, the walleye are different. You know, what I like to do in Wyoming in reservoir fishing is, in the morning and in the evening, you know, that 45 minutes of the sweet spot of the day, you know, I always try to fish around 15 foot of water, 15 to 12 foot of water. And then during the day, what I like to do is when I'm reservoir fishing is try to find a structure where, because we don't really have a basin, you know, like say, sure. You know, cause it starts shallow and a reservoir goes down to, you know, 100 foot and,
whoa.
Yep.
And, you know, and that's it. That's all you got. I mean, it's just a big drop off down to 100 feet. There's no bowl. And so, oh, wow. Yeah. So what I do is
it's just a ravine, right? They plugged up a ravine and filled it with water.
Exactly. And so so you don't really have a basin. So what I try to do is, you know, pick the middle portion of a reservoir where you got, 30 foot of water or so, and then I'll move in towards shore and try to find some structure and fish next to that structure. And I might be fishing that 30, 25 foot. And so when I do that, obviously using a little rattle spoon, but rip and wrap seems to work a little better. And you really got to call those fish in. And the cool thing about fishing a little bit deeper next to structure like that is, you know, we tend to have a lot of crappie. And so, so many times during the day, you'll get a nice big school of crappie that'll just come swimming by, and then it's just game on. So that makes it super,
a lot of fun.
Super fun. And also the perch hang out at that 30 foot level too. So, that's kind of my tactic for fishing, reservoirs. As far as walleye obviously is my favorite species, but,
good answer.
I'm very interested in trying to catch some lake trout, because we do got some big ones around here, and I've never caught one, so
yeah, I'm gonna try. I guess I don't know if I've ever actually caught. Well, maybe
no,
maybe not.
Nope, you haven't. I have.
Yeah.
Hashtag outfish Jeff.
Yeah, you get that one. You get that one this time.
That's all in the skill.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, awesome. Well, usually when we wrap up our guests, we like to have them tell us kind of, we call it a legend, but an ice fishing story, kind of a legendary story from your past. If you've listened to the podcast, you've heard a few of them, and Jason and I had a bunch, but you know, I think we're on episode 46 now, and we're running out. So do you have a legend or a story you could share with us for ice fishing?
Yeah, I got a great story. I got a buddy of mine, a real good buddy of mine. I love to ice fish with him. He's a great fisherman. Yeah, he's from Sheridan, Wyoming. And here a number of years ago, he moved down to Texas. And he never really ice fished. He was actually was a guide, a float guide for trout, like up on the Yellowstone and all that. And so I never really ice fished, and he moved down to Texas for a number of years, you know, and hot weather. And he moved back up to Sheridan here a couple years back, and was just super excited to be back in Sheridan and really wanted to go fishing. And he came back and it was in the winter time. I think it was February. And so he came back and I took him ice fishing. You know, I had all, you know, got all the gear, and he didn't have any gear. Of course, he'd been in Texas for a number of years, and we went ice fishing, and we have a reservoir that's fairly close to town, and it's really clean water. I mean, you can look right to the bottom of the lake. I mean, it's just wicked clean. And so he was so excited, and he, ice was probably, you know, a couple feet thick, and he wanted to drill a hole, right? You know, he wanted to use the ice auger, drill a hole. Sure. So he fires this ice auger up, you know, and he's drilling a couple holes, and he says, "Hey, grab a video of me doing this. I'm going to send it to all my buddies in Texas. They're not going to believe it." So I take a video of him drilling a hole, and we go in the ice hut there, and we're fishing, and he leans forward, and he had just bought this brand new iPhone. It was brand new. Yeah. Like when they were like $1,200, all the bells and whistles.
Yep.
And that thing fell out of his pocket, hits the ice, slides across, and it goes in the hole. And for a second there, he actually thought, like, is it going to float? And before he realized, it's not, it was gone.
Oh.
And we're fishing in 27 feet of water, and you can look through the ice hole and see it laying on the bottom. I took some pictures of it, you know, because it's just really cool to have a picture of it. But anyway, the crazy thing is he was upset because there was that video of him drilling.
Oh.
that hole, right? Well, that night, the phone up, iPhone up, it uploaded to the iCloud.
Oh my gosh.
And he got the video, and it's really grainy. It obviously the quality is not very good because it lost a lot of quality because it was down that lake, but it uploaded to his iCloud that video from that phone.
Okay, that's crazy. Holy
from 27 feet under the water, it uploaded the video. Wow.
It uploaded the video, and we have the video. But yeah, it's just crazy. And so and of course we GPS'd it. Whenever we go back there, we try to find it, but we haven't been able to hit it exactly.
That's too bad you didn't have a magnet. You could have maybe got it.
I know. It's just crazy. And it was brand new. I mean,
$1,200 phone.
Yeah, he was
Jeff can relate to this.
Yeah, there might have been enough. My phone was not $1,200, but I had a similar episode, although it didn't call or
put, no,
it didn't call me.
No, you just watched it.
Yeah.
Go down the hole.
Yes.
Oh, that's awesome, Ken. It's a great story.
Cool. Yes. Well, Ken, I really appreciate you being on the show and the interview and this track sled. I mean, I got to build one. Well, or Jason needs to build one for me because I think he has the tools, but
more my wheelhouse than Jeff's.
Yeah. It's a super fun project. It'll go quicker than you think it will, too. It really will. Hmm.
I have no doubt that I can get an old sled and make a pile of stuff in my garage within a day. Right, it's the rest of it that probably will give me fits.
I'm booking a road trip down to your place for a weekend, Jay. We'll build one.
To help build one? Okay, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Misery loves company.
Yep.
All right. Well, Ken, thanks for being on, and good luck fishing.
Hey. Thanks a lot. You guys too. Enjoy the rest of it. Summer's coming. So,
well, that was really awesome. I am super excited to go find myself a free snowmobile and start tearing it apart and building one. Jason and I need to plan a weekend so I can use his torch and
welder. And we're going to have fun. And those that listen know we're still talking about building Smitty sleds after a couple of years, but this might, you know, this would save time because you wouldn't need a Smitty sled if you built this.
You don't need it. Yeah, so that was super awesome for Ken for coming on and giving us all those tips and how to build it. So it was great to hear from him. So till next time.
Tight lines.
Cheers.
Bye.
You've been listening to the Hard Water Fishing Show with Jeff and Jason.
Say goodbye.
One of the most unique podcasts on the planet, where we talk about tactics, gear, and ice fishing legends. We'll be back soon.
Bye-bye.
Till then, signing off.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.